Aren't the holidays great? But they also cry out for a little me time, I think we can agree. I'm Linda Holmes. When you're ready for a break, there's a world of NPR podcasts just waiting for you on iTunes. Smart conversation, loads of laughs, and a place to immerse yourself in big ideas. So go ahead, click on over to iTunes and search for NPR podcasts. Enjoy.
I'm Stephen Thompson, and what you are about to hear is a different kind of episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm actually here in the studio with Linda Holmes.
That's right. Hi, Stephen.
Oh, I love hosting when you're here. I just love, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, so this will be the second part. Regular podcast listeners will have heard the first half of our live show last week from here at Studio One at NPR HQ, and this is the second half.
And this is a different. We didn't just do another episode of the show with its, you know, with a, you know, your standard topics and what's making us happy. We decided to add a few different segments to the show. So this will probably have roughly the same length as a regular show, but it's completely different.
It is completely different. Oh, we're breaking the rules.
Oh my God! You know, we are rebels.
We are rebels. We are rebels. And it was great fun. And once again, if you were there, thank you. If you were not there, thank you for listening. And we'll see you in 2014. Welcome to the second half of our live event here, and what we're going to do in this half, this is the quiz section, which is my favorite. It's my favorite part because everybody's on the spot, except me, which is exactly how I like it. So we were thinking about doing quizzes, and we thought, well, you know, there's four of us, there's these three guys, but I ask them questions all the time. So we thought we really need to kind of, you know, make sure that we add to the rotation. We need to make sure that we get some special guests in here who are willing to take the tough questions. So we're going to start with a couple of our dear, dear pals, recently named by the AV Club as the best thing that happened to Pop Culture Happy Hour this year, which we agree with. So please welcome from NPR's Code Switch, our friends Gene Demby and Kat Chow. Hello, our friends Gene Demby and Kat Chow.
Hello.
It's good.
It's wonderful to see you. I have questions for you.
Oh, boy.
It's so kind of you to be here to answer questions. And your section is called The Year in Quotes.
Oh, no. Well, can I make a confession to everyone before we start?
Of course.
Before we started earlier today, Linda came over to our desk. And I asked her for, like, a list of things to study before, which she did not give to me. So I'm, you guys, you probably know how I do with quizzes. I make up answers. So. we'll see how this goes.
It's not your fault you didn't know who Jenny Garth was.
Yeah.
It was my fault you didn't Anyway, so it's the year in quotes. I'm going to start with you, Gene Demby.
Excellent.
This is a quote, and then I'm going to give you four answers for the possibilities of who said this and why.
Let's do it.
They're all still monsters walking around in human skin. Here are your four choices for who said that and why. Was it Shonda Rhimes talking about the characters on Scandal?
Oh, we knew that one, sorry. No.
Was it actor George Clooney talking about the paparazzi? Was it director Lars von Trier talking about actors? Or was it TV critic Tim Goodman talking about reality show contestants? They're all still monsters walking around in human skin.
I think I know this.
Come on, Gene.
It's not Scandal. It's not Shonda Rhimes. I follow Shonda Rhimes. And everything she does, I dissect it.
If it's going to be Shonda Rhimes, if that's the correct answer.
I know, I'm so mad.
Yeah.
I want to say Lars von Trier.
Yeah, it's Shonda Rhimes.
Oh!
That's the lead blogger of Code Switch. For all you radio people, Jean just kind of fell on the floor.
She follows me on Twitter now, which is amazing.
Not anymore.
All right, Kat Chow. Okay. According to Us Weekly, who said to a group of kids at a youth program in L.A., have you guys ever seen Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? It's a cartoon much cooler than it sounds. Was it Barack Obama, Newt Gingrich, Prince William, or Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Wow. That is such a strange question. but I love you.
It's not Shonda Rhimes.
Yeah, it's not. I won't insert that answer. I would go with Arnold.
It is actually Prince William. Prince William, apparently a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fan. All right, Gene Demme.
Is it 2 out of 3?
No, well, no, you're each going to get 3 questions.
Okay, all right.
Gene, so don't worry, Gene. You're doing great.
We're both tied for 0 right now.
Who is responsible for this quote? Who knew you could turn 50 and suddenly have a sex career? Would that be Allison Janney, Julianne Moore, Colin Firth, or Kevin Spacey?
In what context would you have said this? I don't understand. Kevin Spacey.
It is actually... You want to make a guess?
Is Julianne Moore.
No, it's Allison Janney.
Oh, okay.
Oh. Allison Janney, who suddenly has a sex career.
Wait, when did she say this?
She said this to Vulture.
About what?
You know, Gene, Shonda Rhimes also said the other thing to Vulture. So your problem is you're not reading Vulture.
That's my problem, yeah.
All right. Cat Chow. Martha Stewart told Dr. Oz this year, "I was married for 30 years to a wonderful man who went nuts and left me."
We've all been there.
What did she say next? Was it, "I made more cranberry scones that week than maybe in the previous 10 years? Was it, "Can you imagine leaving Martha? I mean, I can't imagine." Was it, "I just said, you know, at least help me put away the Christmas decorations before you go." Or was it, "I have to say, an unsatisfying marriage is the one thing even a glue gun can't fix."
Wow.
Cranberry scones, "Can you imagine leaving Martha?" Help me put away the Christmas decorations, or glue gun can't fix.
Honestly, as you were reading this question, almost all I could think about was Martha Stewart's photos that she tweets out of her food. Are you guys familiar with that? Okay, but I think it's the scones. She baked so many scones that week.
It is actually the "Can you imagine leaving Martha?"
No.
Oh my God. I love it.
I thought that was just a way
Martha Stewart is singing to Kanye West.
No.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
That is the one I wanted it to be.
She does have nice chow dogs.
So. Yeah, it's true. And that is the answer that it is. Gene Demby. Jennifer Lawrence on Conan, describing the time that she met an actor, said this: "I turned into a perverted guy. I was like following him into rooms and staring at his ass, and I like lost my mind." This is Jennifer Lawrence on Conan talking about meeting what actor? Is it John Stamos, David Hasselhoff, John Travolta, or Joey Lawrence? Believe it or not, it's one of those
people. Wait, is she old enough to know any of those people?
I know.
Yes, she is.
Jennifer Lawrence on Conan talking about John Stamos, David Hasselhoff, John Travolta, or Joey Lawrence.
All those people were like before her, though.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean she won't know.
Maybe, this is a maybe sensitive issue for Kat.
Maybe. Kat's like, people don't always not know things from before they were born.
It's got to be Stamos.
It is Stamos.
Thank you.
It is John Stamos. You officially know more about John Stamos than Shonda Rhimes.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's called.
Well, Gene, big Beach Boys fan, right?
The episode when we go to Hawaii is really good. It's really good.
Alrighty, Kat Chow. Dana Stevens of Slate referred to one of this year's more poorly reviewed films in this way: "Feels more like a 96-minute-long episode of Scooby-Doo that's been laboriously translated into another language and then back into English." What film was it? Was it White House Down, R.I.P.D., The Incredible Burt Wonderstone, or Last Vegas?
I don't even know what those movies are.
Now, those all came out this year. Yeah. So
I've been under a rock, I guess.
White House Down, R.I.P.D., The Incredible Burt Wonderstone. It's okay not to know that one. Or Last Vegas.
I'm going to go with R.I.P.D.
It is R.I.P.D. Wow. Well, our first quiz smackdown between Gene and Kat officially ends in a tie. Oh. And I have no tiebreaker, so you're just going to have to accept that you are equally awesome.
No, that's not true. That's not true.
Yeah. He thinks he's lead blogger, but I guess not.
Wow. All right. As I said, this has ended in a tie. You are equally awesome. Please join me in saying thank you to Gene Demby.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. All right, we are actually, next we are going to bring up, we do have another special guest, and frankly, I have not cooked the competition by bringing people that I'm related to, but someone has. So I would like to invite my friend Stephen Thompson up here and his unbelievably, incredibly amazing mother, Maggie Thompson.
All right, best one wins. Thanks. All right.
Huh? The two of you will be taking a quiz called The Year in Relentless Capitalism. Maggie Thompson, the website ThinkGeek sells a lot of stuff to fans. Which of the following items is the most expensive? And I have to admit there are five on this list because they were so awesome I couldn't leave any of them off. A 13-inch tall Jon Snow statue from Game of Thrones. A Doctor Who TARDIS mini fridge. A Star Trek limited edition 24-karat gold pizza cutter in the shape of the USS Enterprise.
Wait. Now, is that truly 24-karat, or are
they... It says it's 24K gold.
Solid or plated?
Thank you for your help, my son.
I don't know, smart
pants. Why am I trying to help you?
All right, so we have the Jon Snow statue, the mini fridge, the TARDIS mini fridge, the pizza cutter, Glamdring the Sword of Gandalf, or the Star Wars Jedi and Sith bathrobes.
Not so, the bathrobes.
Yes.
Yeah, so I got to say, it's not the bathrobes.
Yeah, so you're trying to pick the one that costs the most, the statue, the mini fridge, the pizza cutter, the Sword of Gandalf, or the bathrobes.
If it were really the Sword of Gandalf...
Can't argue.
My suspicion is that it is not. Nor did they offer the one true ring, I'm just saying.
Uh-huh.
Okay, it's true. So if it's truly 24 karat, I gotta say the pizza cutter.
It is actually the 13-inch Jon Snow statue, which cost $349.99. The mini fridge is $80. The pizza cutter is $100. The sword, which is not the real sword of Gandalf, is $189.99. And the bathrobes are $90.
See, now, I got to say, quickly, that I thought this was an unfair question to ask my mother, given the likelihood that she would already own all of those items.
Good point. That's
but some of them sometimes get sent to me for reviews, so you know how
true.
That goes.
So she wouldn't, yeah. Stephen, Iron Man 3 made more than $806 million overseas. It made $121 million of that in China. What country made the next most money, according to Box Office Mojo, rounded to the nearest million? Was it South Korea, the UK, Brazil, or Mexico?
Oh,
Iron Man 3. After China, who was next?
Wow. Well, I am going to call upon my ability to only remember one of those choices, and I'm going to say Brazil.
It is actually South Korea, where it made $64 million. The UK, $57 million, Brazil, $48 million, and Mexico, $49 million. So Brazil was actually the lowest, so good one.
Thank you.
Maggie. Maggie, of the top 10 movies in domestic grosses as of December 7th, how many are... Top 10 movies of this year, as of December 7th. How many are non-franchise, non-sequel films written originally for the screen? Meaning, it's not in a franchise, it's not from a book, it's just a movie someone wrote to be a movie, it's not a sequel. How many? Your questions are, your answers are 0, 1, 2, or 3.
Wow.
This is top 10.
Of the year, so far. Not sequels, not franchises, not adapted from books.
I'm going to say zero, just because I'm going to say zero.
It's a good answer. The answer is actually one, which is Gravity.
Right?
Which is Gravity. The rest, if you don't believe me, the rest are Iron Man 3, Despicable Me 2, Man of Steel, Catching Fire, World War Z, Monsters University, Star Trek Into Darkness, Fast and Furious 6, and Oz the Great and Powerful. Hmm. So...
Money?
Steven,
yes.
According to information released by its publisher, Grand Theft Auto V made how much money in its first 24 hours in release? Was it $800,000, $8 million, $80 million, or $800 million?
Often with these things, this is the whole Who Wants to Be a Millionaire thing where you talk these things out.
You're trying to get in my brain.
I'm going to say $80 million.
It is the $800
million. What?
$800 million in the first 20. Now, that probably includes all the pre-orders and stuff like
right,
that.
Right, right.
But according to information...
Oh, so that's not very much at all.
According to the information released by its publisher, and I looked at this like four times in
so,
the story.
So wait a minute. So we're kind of in that same situation?
Right. Yes.
Right? We're going into this with a tie.
Right. Absolutely. Right. Yes.
Okay.
You each have one question left.
All right.
Yeah.
Maggie.
Yes.
This year, the cost of a 30-second ad during the broadcast of the Super Bowl crossed what threshold? $1 million, $2 million, $4 million, or $8 million? Cost Steve, of a 30
Steven
second
would know this
Super
too.
Bowl ad.
I think I do.
No, he wouldn't.
Give me the numbers again.
$1 million, $2 million, $4 million, and $8
million. I'm saying four.
It is $4 million. All right, Steven, the pressure's on.
I know. I'm currently one question dumber than my mother.
I was going to say, if this is not the right answer... then your mother has defeated you.
No, it wouldn't be the first time.
Steven, Box Office Mojo keeps track of the worst opening weekends of all time, which means since 1982. For films opening in more than 3,000 theaters, which they call super saturated.
Okay.
Of the 20 worst, how many were released in 2013? Ooh. 2, 3, 5, or 8? Out of the 20 worst.
Oh, I'm going to nail this. Wow. I mean, it was a floppy kind of year. I mean, you got your...
Super saturated.
We mentioned RIPD already. Mm-hmm. I am going to say... I'm going to do this the same thing. You pick the next highest. I'm going to go 5.
It is a 3.
Gotcha!
The three are Runner Runner. Remember Runner Runner?
For those of you
listening to on the radio, there's a whole standoff and now a handshake and laugh. These three terrible openings were Runner Runner, The Counselor, and Delivery Man, which is sad because Steven and I actually many years ago conceived of the idea, no pun intended, of Delivery Man, only we called it The Impregnator, and we were going to make Ashton Kutcher star in it.
And part of the idea of The Impregnator, I mean, you know what the idea of The Impregnator is, it's right there in the title, but you would have, in the posters, you would have Ashton Kutcher would be surrounded by a bunch of hostile-looking, beautiful women, and he'd be going, "Boo!"
Right. And as we get The Impregnator, but now we know that if we had done it, it would be on the list of the worst supersaturated openings of all time.
Oh, that would have been
Thank
so
you,
disappointing.
So please join me in thanking especially Maggie Thompson. I never like to leave Trey and Glenn out of the quiz section. So next up,
all right, then.
From our very own show, Trey Graham and Glenn Weldon.
Hey, can we do a quick experiment now that we have a live studio audience?
No.
How many of you? This is by applause. How many of you have a difficult time telling Trey Graham and Glenn Weldon's voices apart?
I would say smaller than last year.
How many of you have no trouble at all?
That's right, people. Mine is the one that sounds hairier.
As someone pointed out to us today, I think there's a little of the South in Trey.
There is a little bit of the South in me.
All right. Well, I am giving you a quiz that is called the... This is a quiz that is called The Year in Official Apologies. Glenn.
Were any of them mine?
No. Glenn, Chip Wilson, founder of women's clothing company Lululemon, made some remarks that were taken to imply that the company's workout pants were not intended for women whose thighs rubbed together. After finding himself in hot water, Wilson did what? Was it apologized to his very fit customers for making them think about customers whose thighs rubbed together? Apologized to women with heavy thighs for implying they shouldn't wear his clothes? Apologized to his employees for all they were going through as a result of his comments? Or apologized to no one?
I'm going to go with the first one.
Apologize to the very fit customers for making them think about the heavy customers?
Yes.
No.
That would be the Abercrombie and Fitch approach.
Yeah. Yeah. He actually apologized to his employees for everything that they were going through as a result of his actions.
Right. Still a D-bag.
Yeah. It's not the best apology,
right. Maybe.
Trey, what company's CEO offered an apology for firing someone on a conference call? Was it AOL, AIG, ABC, or AMC?
I think I actually knew this. It was AOL, right?
It was AOL.
Based on actual knowledge.
I know, right?
What are the odds?
What was the guy? The guy was like taking a picture in the meeting or something?
Taking
a selfie?
Recording the meeting, taking a selfie, who knows? Glenn, the CEO of AT&T apologized for a tweet the company sent out to mark what? Pearl Harbor Day, September 11th, Martin Luther King Day, or Easter?
It was somebody else who did the Pearl Harbor Day thing. So give me them again.
Pearl Harbor Day, September 11th, Martin Luther King Day, or Easter?
September 11th.
It was September 11th. If you saw it, it was a picture of someone taking a picture with their cell phone of the Twin Tower, like light tower thing. It was very tacky. And he apologized.
Not much less tacky than the SpaghettiOs Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, it was SpaghettiOs really that had the picture of the SpaghettiO waving the flag on Pearl Harbor Day.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true, too. Look it up. Trey Graham, what actress apologized profusely for her behavior during a run-in with the police, saying, when a police officer tells you to stay in the car, you stay in the car?
Does it end in Lohan?
Well, that's one of your choices.
Okay.
Lindsay Lohan, Betty White. Carrie Russell, or Reese Witherspoon?
Ooh, I know this. As much as I want it to be Betty White, it was Reese Witherspoon.
It was Reese Witherspoon. All right, so it's 2-1.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the pressure's on.
Yep.
Glenn, the CEO of Miracle-Gro, apologized for what offense? Was it A, using inappropriate language? 2, offending some religious people with use of the word miracle? 3, offending other people by misspelling the word grow. Or 4, putting out plant food that contained an excess of sugar.
Huh. I got nothing. Both the miracle thing and the grow thing sound plausible, but the Miracle-Gro has been around forever, so it's got to be 1 or 4, and I'm going to go with 4.
It is actually the foul language. It is 1, the foul language.
Narrowed.
Did he make a Miracle-Gro joke that would make me giggle like a 12-year-old?
No, he didn't. He just was swearing at everyone in meetings and stuff like that. All right, Trey, you basically have already won.
Yep.
But I'm going to give you this. But I'm going to give you this question anyway to see whether you can, you know, increase the margin of victory.
For gloating,
yes.
Yeah. Trey, actor Will Wheaton unsuccessfully campaigned for an apology from the Discovery Channel after a supposed found footage documentary that contained recreations aired around what event? Halloween, a volcanic eruption, a series of tornadoes, or Shark Week?
Oh wow. A series of tornadoes?
It is Shark Week.
Shark Week.
All right.
So we have learned that Trey can answer my very, very silly questions 2-1.
Yes.
So thank you very much to the wonderful Trey and Glenn. And finally, we wanted to conclude our quiz segment with the big. We figured, you know, the big guns, right? At the end of the segment, we figured we'd bring out the big guns, and we figured that it was very important to answer a question that we feel is fundamental to NPR, which is this: is it better to consider all things? Or is it better to consider all songs? And so we have with us, from All Things Considered, Audie Cornish, and from All Songs Considered, Bob Boylan. Very, very exciting.
Songs, I'm like, not by the way, it's to songs. I just thought I'd let you know. Really? If you were wondering.
So this is going to be for all the marbles forever, whether things or songs are better.
Then I should put down my drink.
I would just like to... Although I was told
this was a happy hour.
Songs are kind of things, though.
I was just going to point out that conceptually, all things include all of the songs.
Yeah, but there wouldn't be a good things if there weren't good songs there.
That's true. But the only way to solve this really is with quiz questions.
Wonderful.
So Bob Boylan.
Wait, can I just say, I got off the show today where we talked about like war and, you know, a budget deal. Yeah. And I am scared right now. Like, I didn't understand any of the words you were saying earlier.
Yeah, I knew the words, but I didn't know what quiz.
Please be easy on us.
No, it's really, it'll be a fun one for you, Audie. This is called The Year in What? So, Bob, one of the most gabbed about events of 2013 was the airing of the sci-fi original movie Sharknado.
Of course.
About a tornado of sharks.
Stephen and I watched that.
Yeah. Right, at Bob's house.
Yes.
Which of the following is not a real sci-fi movie, either from 2013 or planned for 2014? Is it Stonados, about a tornado of rocks? Is it?
I so want to see that.
Is it Big Ass Spider?
I've seen it.
It's about a big ass spider.
So it's good. I mean, yeah. Gets bitten in me.
Yeah. Is it Robo Croc? Or is it Chupacabra versus the Alamo?
Wow. Can we just do a marathon of all of those?
Three out of four of those are real sci-fi movies, and one of them is not.
I know, but the first one wasn't, which is...
Stonados?
Yeah, no.
You think Stonados is the fake one?
Yeah, because it's the most plausible.
No, Stonados was just on. And the one that is not a real sci-fi movie is Big Ass Spider, which is a real movie. It's just not a sci-fi movie.
Oh, man. See, that's what threw him off.
Yeah. That's true. I mean,
he knew. Yeah,
that was a trick question.
It is kind of a trick question.
I actually assigned a review of a Big Ass Spider. For
good for you, buddy.
The things
good for
that I am able to say that sometimes surprise me.
That's awesome.
This is what you people do all day. Yeah. I walk by to the studio like, what's going
She's
on?
She's dealing with
here?
War.
It's just, this is what we're doing. So, Audie, BuzzFeed has become rather well known for clicky headlines. Which of the following is not a real BuzzFeed headline of 2013? 13 potatoes that look like Channing Tatum. This man in Nebraska ate an entire sweater. 11 feet that look like Robert Pattinson's face. Or Rihanna spilled popcorn at the VMAs and blamed it on someone else. 3 out of 4 of those are real. We got the potatoes that look like Channing Tatum, the man who ate the sweater, the feet that look like Robert Pattinson, or Rihanna spilled popcorn and blamed someone else. 3 of those are real and 1 is not.
One is not. I'm going to go with the man who ate the sweater. It's like
that
too
is
normal.
Correct.
It's too mundane.
No, I knew that one just because that one so clearly came from Linda Holmes's head.
All right. Bob, which of the following is not on Tumblr's list of the most viral blogs of 2013? Not on the list.
Oh.
Sports balls replaced with cats. Hot dog legs. Mustaches on actresses. Things fitting perfectly into other things. 3 out of 4 of those are on the list of the most viral blogs of 2013.
I'm still going with the first one again. I'm just going to keep going with number 1. And, you know, eventually, odds-wise.
Right. You're going with sports balls replaced with cats?
Totally.
It is actually mustaches on actresses.
How could they not do that?
Yeah, I was going to say.
It was like no teeth on actresses.
That
actually.
Is a real
oh,
one,
Oh, that
yeah.
was horrifying.
I don't know why I knew that.
So busy covering
explain this
covering
to
war.
Me. Okay, let's have a chat about it.
How long was that list again?
All right, Audie, which of the following does not appear on Forbes' list of the top 10 food trends of 2013? Top 10 food trends. octopus, alongside the quote, "In 5 years, octopus will be the new prawn." Hemp milk, deviled eggs, next to the quote, "They're so grandma." Or tiny desserts. Octopus, hemp milk, deviled eggs, or tiny desserts.
And this is not on the list.
The one that is not on the list.
But it's Forbes.
Yes, it's a Forbes list.
Which changes the calculus.
Yes, sure. It does.
Forbes list of food trends.
Maybe, no, deviled eggs might be ironic, right? They might be kind of into that. Tiny desserts?
It is actually hemp milk. The tiny desserts are on there.
See, as an NPR person, you can't put something like hemp milk on there. I'm going to think that's a real thing.
Yeah.
That is a trend.
Yeah.
I mean, that was my morning editorial meeting.
There are people in this room.
It's a diabolical trick,
it's a little
is what
unfair.
It is. All right, Bob. Which of the
following?
Which of the following does not appear in actress Gwyneth Paltrow's gift guide for the holidays this year?
Hemp milk.
Animal heads made of newsprint. Cognac glasses that roll around so the cognac can breathe. A bracelet made of reclaimed wood from demolished inhumane zoo enclosures.
This is another one where I know the words.
Or
images
in this order.
Are just not forming.
Or an artisanal organic cheese of the month club. The animal heads made of newsprint, the cognac glasses that roll, the zoo enclosure bracelet, or the artisanal cheese of the month club.
I'm going to look carefully into the eyes of all you people.
Three of those things are on her list.
Who thinks it's a cognac?
This is Bob's goop knowledge.
That's true.
Another three words I never expected to hear.
I'm going to go with the zoo thing.
You are correct,
Bob. Oh, thank God.
Made up the zoo thing.
All right, Ms. Holmes, can I hear the score, please?
I believe that, isn't it? It's tied, I think, right? Isn't it?
One-to-one,
I think,
right?
You each have one. I think you each have one.
Yeah.
So if you get this one, if you get this one,
are things really going to be better than songs? Do you want to do that to these people?
If you get this one, you will be the winner. And if you do not, it will be a tie. And things and songs will be equally awesome.
I don't believe that, so please continue.
Which is not a real 2013 headline keeping us informed about how famous people feel about things?
Wait, can you say the category?
Not a real headline from this year, keeping us informed about how famous people feel about things.
Okay.
Stars respond to possible asteroid impact. Celebs react to President Obama's request for action against Syria. Hollywood reacts to partial government shutdown. Or Nelson Mandela's death, Hollywood mourns civil rights icon.
I'm going to use Bob's technique. Go with number one.
The stars respond to the possible asteroid impact?
Yeah, because there wasn't actually... All the other things exist.
Yeah. you are correct, Audie Cornish.
Just because I pay attention to the news.
We love both things and songs, but for the purposes of this, things are better than songs. And thank you very much to Audie Cornish and Bob Boyle. All right, in the time that remains, what we want to do is we want to open up the floor for Q&A with you guys. If you have questions, if you want to ask us stuff about the show, if you want to ask us stuff about culture, stuff we like, stuff we don't like, there are microphones right in the middle of this thing. You can get right up and talk to us. There's one right up here, and there's one right back there. And believe me when I tell you, we are sitting here hoping that you will. So feel free, get up, stroll over there. I see some people who are kind of like, the point is, come on, there we go. We're going to take down here in the front first.
Hi,
Hi, sorry.
Tell us who you are and where you're from.
My name is Eric Stadnick. I've met you all.
Oh, hey. Of course you have. I apologize. You're out of context.
It's very weird. Yeah, I live in Alexandria. My question is, has there ever been a segment that one of you proposed where the others of you were just like, oh, no, we're not doing that?
I don't know. Glenn just mentioned he wants to do the next Hobbit movie this week.
We are doing the Hobbit. It happened about 20 minutes ago backstage when Glenn said he wanted to see us to see the Hobbit movie.
Maybe the Hobbit.
The Desolation of Smaug.
Yeah. Yes, the Desolation. Yeah.
I'm sure there are. I think mostly we make those decisions based on, I mean, there are times when we don't do stuff because we just don't have time to do the, like, there have been movies that we were going to cover that we didn't do because we just couldn't get there.
There's also a certain amount of, like, I don't know anything about that. Yeah. That happens actually with me
and
a lot.
And those are the ones we do. Yeah, I don't know that we have any sort of, typically that's either we can't really do it logistically, or it's just something where we feel like not enough of us are going to have anything to say.
Yeah, that's a big one. Yeah.
I never throw down a gauntlet or anything like
that. No, I feel like we all, you know, try to play ball, so.
Yeah,
Trey's constantly like, German art song or bust.
Terrible, terrible stubbornness. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you. All right. Heading to the back.
Hi, I'm Megan Foster, and I live in D.C.
Hi, Megan.
Trey, what show should we see in New York next weekend?
Oh, my gosh. Do you want comedy, musical, play, or
see, this was a topic we wouldn't do.
Right.
Top two shows of any genre.
Okay. I talked about this, so forgive me if this is familiar to too many of you, but I talked about this on Weekend Edition recently with Scott Simon. I saw 5 plays in 3 days, back to back. The 12th Night that's in repertory with Richard III is probably the best 12th Night I've ever seen. And I've seen it probably 8 times. Mark Rylance is stupendous. Stephen Fry is magnificent. And the actor, because they're all men, the actor playing the maid, Mariah, walks off with 2 or 3 scenes. It's just a terrific show, and if you are into Shakespeare, see that. If you'd like a light musical about mass murder, A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder is kind of what you would get if Gilbert and Sullivan had written Sweeney Todd. It's based on the same source material as Kind Hearts and Coronets, which is a movie with Alec Guinness back in the day. And it's really charming and funny and smart. Fun Home is hard to get tickets to, but it's very good down at the Public Theater. And I really enjoyed, for you Neil Patrick Harris nerds, I really enjoyed a show called Nothing to Hide, which is a close-up magic show in which 2 guys sit and do magic tricks in front of you for about 80 minutes and just are...
I just say this noise, like, yeah.
Are... They are astonishing. And one last recommendation. It's off-Broadway, so it's a little cheaper. The play Buyer and Seller is a one-man, and Seller is C-E-L-L-A-R. It's a one-man show starring Michael Urie from Ugly Betty, and it's a tight script, a funny, funny show, and he is impeccable. So
wonderful. Excellent answer. Excellent answer. All right, in the back.
Hello, my name is Gigi. I'm from Silver Spring, Maryland.
Hi.
Yay, Silver Spring. I love pop. I hate guilt. Can you talk a little bit about guilty pleasures in terms of what makes them so pleasurable and what makes them guilty as it comes to pop culture?
I think we all, you know, we actually did a show where we talked a little bit about this, I think around last Christmas. And you know, I think we all have the attitude that if you genuinely enjoy it, it's not necessarily healthy to experience a lot of guilt about it. Guilty pleasures for me, if I really enjoy it, then and it sort of fills me with something that feels good, then I try not to agonize over it too much, because I think a lot of times the guilty pleasure thing is a little bit of a, as Glenn I think once very wisely said, that's not guilt, it's shame.
Yeah.
which is really different. That shame is external. And so So I think we all kind of came around to the point where we pretty much, if you listen to the show we did about guilty pleasures, we kind of get to the point where I'll say, okay, so none of us believe in this is kind of the problem.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I've certainly talked about this with music quite a bit, and I really, you know, I think I might have even said something like guilt is the enemy of joy, you know, mm-hmm. that for me, I really try to extinguish from my life any semblance of guilt, shame, or pride. particularly,
you're doing a really good job.
Particularly, I try to be. Particularly, I try to be as without shame as possible.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I was out last night with some friends, a friend from out of town, and we went to Show Tunes Night at the local watering hole. And the first thing they played when we walked in the door was a trio, a medley of songs from a Broadway fundraiser called My Favorite Broadway. And it's Maren Mazzi, Audra McDonald, and Judy Kuhn singing a quadlibet, I think technically is what it's called, of...
Sorry.
See what I have to put up with? Of unexpected song from Andrew Lloyd Webber's Song and Dance. It's something from Aspects of Love. Love Changes Everything from Aspects of Love. And I forget what the third one is. Oh, it's I don't know how to love him from Jesus Christ Superstar. I am not an Andrew Lloyd Webber fan, but those three talents and that arrangement knock my socks off every time because it's just full-on, face-open singing with three really talented people singing songs that are, for all their sort of cheap manipulativeness, really good.
Yeah. I talked recently on the show about really loving Songza, which is a service that does different playlists. And recently I was listening to one that's something like labeled like guilty pleasure songs. And I was listening to it like in the car. And so like I'm driving down the highway and like the song's playing. And I'm like, da 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 da. And I'm thinking like, this is horrible and it feels great.
Right.
And so, yeah, I'm
One trap to, if you start thinking that there's such a thing as a guilty pleasure, you might fall into the trap of intellectualizing why you like it. Right. Like feeling the need to explain it. And that is a dead end because that is just a lot. You're using your intelligence for no reason. It is a bad purpose. Just love what you love.
Yeah, love what you love. I think that's our philosophy very much. All right, up here in the front.
Hi, my name is Gretchen. I'm from D.C., and this is mostly a question for Linda, because I read Eleanor and Park after you recommended it and told my friend to read it, and she texted me as soon as she finished it and said, so what do I read next, because I love this, and what's similar to it? I didn't know what to tell her. So what should we read now?
You know, here's what I'm going to do, and you're all, again, going to think that I'm totally pandering here to someone that we love, but what you should do is you should go on Twitter and you should ask Margaret Willison. That is my actual absolute recommendation. Margaret, who is a big fan of our show and has actually made like a little brief appearance on our show, is a librarian who does a tremendous amount of work with YA. And if I were asked this question, the only thing I would do is I would go to Twitter, and her Twitter handle is Mrs. Friday Next, and I would just ask Margaret. I would say, Linda told me to ask you what to read after Eleanor and Park, and Margaret will write you 400 tweets about things that you should read. That's my recommendation.
Yeah, Margaret's chief export is enthusiasm.
Margaret is fantastic at this exact thing. Ask Margaret. All right? In the back.
Hi, I'm Paul Brockwell from Richmond, Virginia.
Hi.
Hey.
My question is, if you could briefly just talk about your first television crush. And by that I mean the show or item on television that changed the way you think about or enjoy television as culture.
So you're talking about like a television, like a crush on a thing on television, not like Ricky Schroeder.
Because the answer is always Ricky Schroeder.
Wow, that's a great
question.
Wait,
which are we coming down on?
Yeah. I think we're coming down on like... What do you want to know? You would talk about on a show?
Yeah, shows would be great. Or Ricky Schroeder if you want to talk about him.
One thing you're going to find is that all of us on this panel are within 3 years of each other in age. Yeah. So this is going to narrow us down a little bit.
I'm trying to remember. It was probably something like China Beach, which I just recently was watching on DVD. And it was probably something like that where I started to feel like I saw a little bit of the possibility opening up for what was possible.
Monty Python, Doctor Who, It's Gary Shandling Show, Twin Peaks. Boom. I've talked about, I think, all of them.
Boom.
Gosh. If we're talking about the sort of pulled me toward the area of pulled me toward the kind of thinking I hold about television right now. And this is only because I saw it before I saw Sports Night. But I have to go with The West Wing. You know, smart, quick-moving television with intelligent characters and, you know, engaging storytelling.
See, in thinking in terms of first, I immediately went to Warner Brothers cartoons.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And like obsessing over Daffy Duck and being furious every time some like Steamboat Mickey black and white thing came on, or you know, something with
I wanted the good stuff, rabbit season, duck season, you know.
So I mean, certainly that was a, you know, there are a bunch of things like there's this cartoon called The Great Toy Robbery, this Canadian cartoon that I was in. I mean, I was raised by nerds, as you might have noticed. But probably the first like serialized TV show that I became incredibly emotionally wrapped up in was probably maybe Buffy.
I was going to say Buffy, I bet. Yeah. All right.
Did a lot of crying while watching that.
Excellent, excellent, fun question.
Hormones and sadness.
Down here in the front.
Hi, my name's Christina. I'm from D.C. by way of Baltimore. One of the things that I always love about you guys is how articulate you are about the things you love, which, good for you. You're on the radio. Words are important. But what I also really love is when you guys talk about something that I've also loved, but I'm like so emotionally moved by it, and then you find a great way to articulate it. One thing that sticks out to me is, Stephen, when you talked about Iron and Wine, I got to see a great live performance of them at Lollapalooza in Chicago, and I just remember like I was so overwhelmed that I couldn't think about how to even articulate it, even being a very wordy person. So I was kind of thinking like, I wonder if you guys have ever had something where you're like, I just loved it, just like, period, full stop, can't even really like analyze it. Like, it's just like, it was great, done.
That's one thing that notes come in really handy for. Because no, I absolutely have that. And when expected to just sort of if you said right now, talk about The Trapeze Swinger by Iron and Wine, I would probably struggle to do it. But if I have a little notepad, another thing that we have that makes us tremendously articulate is editors.
Yes. Yeah.
That's true. It's a good time to thank all of our editors through the years. We have Mike Katziff here in the front row.
You know, Jess Gittner
in St. Louis. Lauren McGaughey and Nick Fountain who are here tonight.
And, that's true.
And
that's
so
true.
They so they make us they make us sound so much smarter than we are. We are dullards.
We are prone to false starts.
Yeah. But, all right. I want to do two more questions. Thank you so much. All right, down here in the front, you are going to have to, well, we're going to help you with this microphone.
No, just make her jump.
Hi, I'm Annabelle.
Hello, Annabelle.
Also from Silver Spring.
Hooray.
I was wondering if starting in 2014, every few months, you guys could just send out a bloopers. times you've messed up, and it's really funny because I think a lot of people would like that.
We mess up a lot. I will tell you. We have some of those that we have some of those that we have kept that because they make us laugh. So it's absolutely. I think that's an idea we should consider.
Well, I mean, one thing that often happens. First of all, you get a whole bunch of things, and if you watch enough blooper reels, there's a certain amount of like just flubbing. And just saying the wrong word, blah, 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 hold on, reset. Blah. And it's not, you know, you hear enough of that, it gets a little bit deadening. But every once in a while, we have a situation where I will be talking passionately about something I like, and I'm sort of setting up who it's going to be, and Glenn Weldon will be like, is it Clem Snide? And then I'll be like, no, let me talk. Is it Eve Barzelay of Clem Snide? And then I stop and tell everybody to F off. And so, like, we have a few bloopers like that that we wouldn't necessarily release to young, impressionable children such as yourself.
Can't believe you. I cannot believe you. I think it is an idea worth considering, Annabelle. And we certainly keep them for ourselves, so I don't know why we shouldn't share them. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
All right. We're going to do one more quick in the back, and then we got to get out of here.
Hey, I'm Molly Redden, and I'm from
Arlington.
Oh,
hi, Molly Redden.
Hey, I know some of you. Okay, so going into the holiday season, I really like Christmas music, but I get so tired of hearing like the 40th crooner version of Joy to the World. So I'm wondering if you guys have not just like really good versions of songs we all know, but like also just really refreshing antidotes that we can listen to that make us enjoy the season, but not like want to blow our brains out.
I'm gonna recommend the one that I always listen to. It may want to make you blow your brains out, but my favorite Christmas song of all time, it's not really a Christmas song, but Hard Candy Christmas, the Dolly Parton version from the movie. It's amazing. But we have a guest expert in the house who may or may not have just written a column about this for, was it Slate?
This is our dear pal, Chris Klimek, who has also been on our show. So why don't you, Chris, if you'd be willing, why don't you give Molly a recommendation?
Okay. Are you looking for something that's going to help you feel celebratory and you're just tired of the songs that already exist kind of in that vein? Or do you want something that expresses the more complex, conflicting emotions of, do you get sad at Christmas time? a little more detail, please.
Okay, so I would love some recommendations of like new songs that like aren't recordings of, you know, things that were written in the 40s. Like all range of emotions are good. Like we all love Sufjan Stevens, like sad Christmas music that are also sort of
okay.
Like,
you took my first one.
Okay. but yeah, just, you know, new things we can add to the canon. No range of emotions.
Okay. Nick Lowe has he's done a Tiny Desk in the last couple years. Very, very well received. He's 64 years old, so he has multi-generational appeal. But he has just released his first Christmas album. It's called Quality Street. And it's great. There are four new Christmas songs on it, as well as a few covers. The four new ones, there's kind of a sad heartbreak one. There's a funny one about just being snowed in at the airport. Those are all really good. Leona Lewis has, I think, three new Christmas songs on her Christmas album. The rest are standards, but those are all great. Kelly Clarkson has a new Christmas record this year. You know, these are all kind of channeling. Do you know Phil Spector?
Heard of him.
Okay. A lot of these are kind of throwbacks to Christmas pop music that's existed before. They are kind of, you know, consciously imitating the style that really originated in the 60s. So if you want something really, really different from that, I'd say go to the Nick Lowe. Also, so that's Lowe, Lowe. There is an entirely separate husband and wife band called Lowe. Just L-O-W, that had an EP out just called Christmas.
Steven's talked about how much he loves
it. Right, right, yeah. So that one, too. So Nick Lowe and just Lowe, full stop with no E.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Klimek.
Cool. And so very quickly, two late-breaking recommendations from opposite ends of the universe. If you can find it, there is a Christmas album by the late, great Joan Sutherland. She is late, right?
Somebody pull out their smartphone, right? Sure.
I think she died. In which she does the classic Cantique de Noël, O Holy Night, in C major instead of B flat major, because she's Joan Sutherland and she can. You know, because B flat's not high enough if you're Joan Sutherland. And then one of the great sort of lounge classic Christmas songs is always on my Christmas playlist. It's called 5 Pound Box of Money by Pearl Bailey.
Wonderful. Excellent. Thank you, Trey Graham. And that brings us to the end of our Pop Culture Happy Hour live event. We are so grateful that you all came down. And we are so happy. We're so happy that you make it possible for us to do this show that we really love. We want to thank Eric Newsom and Portia Robinson-Migas and Anna Sivak for helping us with the show, as well as Neil Tebald and Melissa Marquis for helping us out with the audio. And thank you again, of course, to our special guests who came and took quizzes with us. And thanks to our pals, Chris and Mike and Nick and Lauren and some of the other folks who are here. And thanks to everybody for being here. And we will see you around the podcast. And thank you again for coming. Hey. you're still here. That is so fantastic. Aren't the holidays great? But, you know, they do cry out for a little of that me time. I'm Linda Holmes. When you're ready for a break, there's a world of NPR podcasts just waiting for you on iTunes. Smart conversation, loads of laughs, and a place to immerse yourself in big ideas. So go ahead, click on over to iTunes and search for some NPR podcasts. Enjoy.